got it. And some people don't talk about getting all the things in life that you want. You wish it might happen. He's called a dumb luck. But that guy's so lucky, he's just way much too much.
He's the man with the bad guitar.
That's who I'm talking about.
He's the man with the bad guitar.
Oh, yeah. Don't give me all that kind of luck. Vacation on a cruise ship around the world. When he gets home, he don't bother looking for no girl. Straight to the ace, got a royal flush. Well, baby, go rub his bag for good luck.
He's the man with the bag.
That's what I'm talking about.
He's the man with the bag.
Oh, yeah. Don't give me, he got lucky. Such and such. Well, he's the man with the magic touch.
Big band music. Isn't it fantastic? We're just past 1 o'clock now, and it's time for the new WHFR Journal, our public affairs show. Local news and alternative views beginning immediately. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronick. Happy to be with you today, and thank you for tuning in. It is the 18th of December, 2009. WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College. Happy holidays to all of our listeners from the station making waves. Joining me in the studio today are our WHFR News Director, Dennis Reimars, and also WHFR reporter, Amy Powers. Hi, folks.
Hello, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
Okay, somebody's mic
nice
is...
Nice to be here.
Yes, I hear you both.
Okay,
oh,
great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Business.
We are going to have a brief break. Next week, Friday, folks, is going to be part of our special winter season celebration recordings that people have done individually. I know that Amy was part of a show, and Dennis, you too, yes?
Absolutely.
And I was in there. So a whole bunch of special one-hour shows done by either one or several of our WHFR staff are going to be presented all day Christmas Eve day, that's next Thursday, as well as next Friday, Christmas Day. And so that means there's no chance for us to be live in there, but you will hear familiar voices on those 2 days. And we are celebrating all the different holiday traditions, and as well as peace and love and justice for all. And in fact, on the show today, we hope to have a special guest calling in to talk to us about that oh-so-elusive goal of peace. That should be happening in just a few minutes from now. We'll be getting, we're expecting a live call from Santa Claus. No, from, well, if Santa can bring peace to the world, I think that would be a wonderful gift. But usually he's into the smaller stuff, the materialism thing, and that's unfortunate. But or in Miracle on 34th Street, he got a house. he actually got, a little three-bedroom ranch house for the folks at the end of the movie. So, with a swing set in back. So what could be better than
that?
Yeah, but remember that the point of that movie was bringing people together in love. So before the house, there was that connection.
I have to agree.
Right. Yep.
So I think we may be missing.
Well, Santa had to keep out of jail, first of all. That was his first problem in that movie.
Wow, that was a total misunderstanding.
That's what I thought, yeah.
It was also a movie. Right. Okay.
Yeah, it's Hollywood. Okay. But Macy's was real. Yes, sirree, Bob.
Natalie Wood, wasn't it?
Yes, Natalie Wood was a little girl. Yes. Yeah. How soon she grew up. Anyway, and then died, unfortunately, a few thousand decades later. But unfortunate. But anyway, here we are. And we wanted to start with at least the headline story. We've been covering the local school funding problems, which is a problem for all the local schools in Michigan and other states, too. And here's the latest spin on it, if you hadn't already caught it, from last Sunday's Press and Guide. A temporary reprieve in part of the planned funding cuts to schools will not change Dearborn's plans to lay off about 120 employees Monday night. And that already did happen, and the Wednesday Press and Guide, those people are gone, and more will follow, in fact. It's just for some reason they're sort of phasing them in. Governor Jennifer Granholm announced Thursday, 8 days ago, that she will quote-unquote pause. So that's strange how you can do a quote-unquote pause. They don't know what to call it, or it's not really a pause. Anyway, it's in quotes. Very confusing. I was taught in English grammar class in college, never use quotes. Use the correct word. Use the real word. Hmm. But maybe this was in Granholm's speech. She's calling it a quote-unquote pause. So who knows what it really is?
Right.
You know, is it a real pause, a temporary pause, a pause? A pause to reflect.
A pause before it totally disappears.
Cat's pause. We don't know.
Pause.
Yeah.
How many different kinds of pauses are there? Well, we don't know, but probably it's not the Katie Hetrick's choice here of words. It's probably from Governor Granholm. Anyway, Governor Granholm will temporarily or sort of hold back, anyway, the $127 per student cut that she imposed on school districts until January, because the latest state budget forecast was a little less bleak. Okay, real bleak, but a little less bleak. So $127 out of the cut is going to be held back or sort of paused or something like that. $165 per student cut imposed by the legislature, a cut in so-called 20J funding from the governor, and reduction in funds for at-risk students still stand. And that 20J is the one where rich districts or districts that want to support their schools more than the average the state is asking for, like Dearborn, that extra amount is gone. And it's going to stay gone. So we're back to funding the same as every other student in Michigan, although we're actually collecting more money temporarily, which is just being eaten up somewhere in the budget. So I think that'll change somehow. I don't know if people will let that happen if they're not getting any benefit coming back to them from the state of Lansing. Anyway, the Dearborn Public Schools have to find $9.5 million to cut from its budget mid-year, which, as is described in the article from Wednesday, is a very difficult thing to do mid-year. It's going to causes havoc with budgets and proposed spending, and you actually have to lay off more people than you would have if you knew that amount was not going to be there at the start of the year. I know it's crazy, right. But I mean, they can't redistribute things when they're already spent half of it on things. And here we are halfway through the year, and now they've got to cut $9.5 million. If they knew at the start. So definitely all of us here go along and support Andy Dillon, who suggested too, among many other people, that we absolutely have to require our legislature to have a budget in place, including school funding, by July 1 when the year starts. In fact, wouldn't it be great to have it even earlier so that the school districts could figure out what they're going to do before July 2?
Right.
I mean, that's a heck of a burden. They don't know the school funding before the first day of the fiscal year. That's you know, I'm sure they'd have some plans in place, but what if the money's more or less, and then they got to regroup and reanalyze, and it's going to take them another week or two. So they're still going to be kind of stuck, but at least have the budget, only makes sense, folks, have the budget for the fiscal year in place before the fiscal year begins. So June 30th, Okay. Well, anyway, we'll see if that happens.
Because I think we can certainly plan on the funds being less for at least the next couple years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's. It doesn't look like the economic situation in Michigan is going to get better. And we don't think there's going to be any of this extra stimulus money that can be redirected to the schools as they've done this year. So next year there won't be any, probably, any governmental support of money to the states that can be redirected to local schools. So it's really going to be difficult next year, apparently. Again, unless we can increase our tax base or raise taxes. I mean, that's, you know.
Neither seem likely.
Right, yeah. How else can you cut? You know, some people are saying, keep cutting. Well, I think we're already cutting, and I think the city's going to be hurting. The education of our students is going to be hurt horribly. I've said that for years when we keep cutting teachers. And the quote here in the paper is that restoring classroom teachers has always been our first priority. That's a statement from my former student and now PR director, as he doesn't want to be called, Dearborn's communications coordinator for the Dearborn School District, Dave Mustonen. He said, restoring classroom teachers has always been our first priority. In all, 385 positions are slated to be cut, including more than 90 classroom teachers and 12 media specialists, also known as school librarians. School board members could approve the first round of layoffs Monday night, which they did. Let me switch to the paper. Again, we're waiting for a phone call, which will stop our local stories and go to the interview as soon as that comes in. School jobs cuts become a reality. This is from Monday night. It's reported right here. Layoffs were effective Tuesday for 75 non-instructional staff, consisting mostly of paraprofessionals and secretaries, including media secretaries. I was talking to my daughter in the last week, who works in Southwood Public Schools, and I said, because we had this question on this show, what are paraprofessionals? How professional are they? And in Southfield, at least, they're not necessarily very professional. They don't necessarily have any training, even a couple years of training in college as teachers or anything else.
Certification?
No.
Okay.
No. So the term is, at least in Southfield Public Schools, it's slightly misleading because these people are not professionals. They are helping professionals, though. So they're partners with, I guess maybe that's where the paraprofessional comes from, aides to teachers. And the most important thing that paraprofessionals do in Southfield Public Schools is to help the special ed teachers and the special needs students, although they're not calling them special needs students anymore. But, so that's it's and it's really going to mess them up. They're losing most of their secretaries in Southfield and all their paraprofessionals, all of the aides, as well as many teachers and administrators and janitors, and they can't maintenance persons. They can't really afford I guess to employ more. My daughter says it's going to be a disaster. As it is, they're signing out for every sheet. She has to sign her name for every sheet of paper she gets, for the printers in her classroom and for the Xerox machines. They don't have textbooks. She has to bring in supplemental books that she buys out of her own pocket. And so I don't know if actually the Dearborn Public Schools are quite as desperate. I think all the districts are desperate in one way or another. An ironic story, and I guess we've gone as far as we can with that. There doesn't look to be any hope in the future for this year. I mean, those cuts altogether, 385. Again, some have just started. There's going to be more. The teacher names specifically will be mentioned later in January who are going to be laid off, and all of the teachers will go February 1 who have to be cut.
No, I was wondering when the cuts took effect or the layoffs took effect, and you've answered that.
Yeah,
February 1.
They're being phased in, but for the teachers, it's February 1. Although they haven't actually figured out the last name there. But all the support staff, including those here at the college, the same union anyway, they're gone, and so there'll be a reshuffling by seniority, and obviously some positions can't be filled any longer. But whether that'll be in K-12 or Henry Ford Community College, which would be a shame because we're busting at the seams. We need every person we can get here because of the, it's almost 27% increase from last year, and people need jobs and need retraining at our level desperately, immediately. not a matter of, well, 12 years later, we'll graduate from high school. It's immediate now. So the cuts to the college, and it's true, we're here at the college, and, you know, Amy and Dennis don't care, except as students. They want to have some classes available, but they're not directly employed, and I'm just part-time, so what the heck, I work cheap. So, that, you know, part-timers wouldn't get cut. But to lose our support staff here, any support staff would be not good at all, but the K-12 situation is desperate. Well, the irony is from the Wednesday press and guide, and that is that the board just approved last week $745,000, that's $750,000, on classroom technology. But of course, the board members, like board member Mary Lane, she said it's very frustrating to sit and see money and not be able to spend it on what you think it should be spent on. And they feel that should be on teachers, keeping teachers. But in fact, it's federal money, and it's earmarked. It only goes for classroom technology, such as, I don't know, computers would be the best example, or internet connections, or something. And that's fine, but here we have all the technology, and we don't have enough teachers or support staff, or media technicians, also known as librarians, to really facilitate that. I mean, you know, it's really ironic, and apparently a little bit of those funds can be used on personnel, and they've already done that, but some funds such as these can't be spent on personnel. And each of the more than 17 Dearborn schools that receives Title I money decides how to spend those funds. Principals and teachers meet to develop a plan on how to best serve students. So I'm sure they're going to try to spend it on technology that might be of use in the future if they ever get enough people to help facilitate it, or use it in areas where they still have support staff and teachers. Maybe a couple of paraprofessionals are still left, but not that many. So difficult time, difficult situation, and you know, what can we say? In fact, there's even a Press and Guide editorial here, which means it comes from probably Tim Powers at the Press and Guide. And they don't normally write their own editorials unless they really get compelled to do so. But there, Tim does echo what we've already said here. So he's agreeing with us, not vice versa. No. Local school districts can be improved, but state's cuts late in the game devastate fiscal planning. And I think they misspelled devastate. Oh. But don't they have spell check?
In the headline?
Yeah, isn't that wrong? Is that right? Yeah, somebody's going to look it up
does,
here. But
it does look right.
It looks right to him?
Sure.
Okay. Devastate. I always pronounce it devastate, like an A in there.
So did I. That's how I wrote it out when you asked if it was right.
Uh-oh.
But who knows?
Well, Tim, don't worry about the spelling. It sounds similar. We know what you mean, and I know what you mean, and that's the important thing. We totally agree there. You just that's just wrong. we're going to look at other educational reforms that last week I think I cast aspersions, as I'm wont to do, to Tom Watkins. And let's see, that back in the Sunday Press and Guide here. You know, this is the new WHFR Journal, the only show where we can hear the pages turning on the air. We use real newspapers here, not that electronic high-tech stuff, you know, off the internet. Real papers. That way the words don't keep changing. Our
or
eyesight,
disappearing.
Yeah, our eyesight may get blurry, but by golly, there it is. That's sort of a rant against Kindle and other electronic books that I have, that just because you have an electronic book doesn't mean the words are going to stay there. A couple months ago, and I may have mentioned this before, Amazon.com, which is the merchandiser for the Kindle electronic book, they removed a book that people had already bought from their Kindles. Apparently, they did not have copyright permission to sell it, they discovered later. And because it's a wireless device, you know, you can receive it over the internet directly to your ebook. So they just went and were able to go electronically into your Kindle and delete it.
No, that doesn't
after
seem
you,
right.
After you bought it,
oof.
Too.
Now, maybe
they credit.
I'm
they
sure
should have.
They
should have credited the account, or they'd have a bunch of much bigger lawsuits facing them. But that's the problem with electronic stuff and computers. I mean, we've got a hard drive in our production studio that this morning, all the production files are gone. Even though the hard drive is still plugged in, I can't make it show up on the screen. Now, I'm sure we'll get it all back someday. It's all this electronic stuff, this virtual reality stuff. No, folks, you have to live in the real world. Buy books. Give books as Christmas presents. It's a wonderful thing. Or give people a gift card or something, although the selection of books at most bookstores is pathetic these days. The range of books is huge, but try to find a bookstore that carries everything that's available, or even a small percentage. I'm sorry to say that the local booksellers, Barnes & Nobles, Borders, they're carrying a lot fewer books in their stores than ever before. The selection, to an old literary professor like myself, is pathetic. It's terrible. Not just the classics, but even the new books that are coming out. So that's why I think some people might be tempted to maybe get a Kindle or whatever. If they know what they're looking for, they can get it online, either electronic or from Amazon as a hardbound book. But get the hardbound books. Pass them around. Go to your local library while your library still has books. I mean, they're getting into electronic e-books too. And so I think there's a real danger. We're going to lose a lot of information at some point. A lot of books and literature will just go poof. Oh, well, we lost the 14th century. Oh, well, just a bunch of corrupt popes and some plagues going on. So what? No big deal. Yeah. I think there was like, was it Machiavelli in the 14th century Dante's Inferno? Dante's work, the Inferno. It's a great classic of Italian literature and the first great epic classic written in Italian. They were all written in Latin before that, and could just gone, 14th century gone. That's actually a line from a science fiction film from a few thousand years ago, a couple decades ago, called Rollerball. And there was this one computer left in the world, had all the information in the world, and the one guy went in there to get some information. He physically went to Switzerland, where this big computer is, and a little computer glitch this morning, we lost the 14th century. no big deal, just a bunch of corrupt popes and a couple of plagues, that's all. Yeah, of course, that's disastrous.
What was the rest of the movie? Rollerball?
Yeah, they redid like it and it had nothing to do with corrupt popes.
Like Mel Brooks.
It's, you know, going around in a circle, but instead of just a roller skating thing, they'd actually fire cannonballs that would roll down the course with you while you're fighting other players, and they would explode.
Because roller skating is too easy.
And right? Blow you up. So, yeah, put a few little obstacles. So it's sort of like extreme roller skating, derby. Extreme roller derby, which was broadcast, you know, it's like gladiators, Christian versus the lions. The Christians had no chance,
right?
You know, but everybody loved it. Good sport.
I missed that one.
Yeah.
Really?
Okay. Tom Watkins, back to Tom. Last week I may have criticized him. He has a regular editorial. It's a choice of the Press and Guide to use it or not, and by golly, they've chosen to use it. He was a former head of the state of Michigan Board of Education, which most people say, what do they do? And that's still my question. What do they do? Michigan has the most inactive and, I believe, most ineffective Board of Ed in the history of the United States. One thing that did happen, but I think it's the legislature that made it happen, probably facilitated, though, by the state Board of Ed, and that is the new tougher, if you will, requirements for high school graduation. Mm-hmm. So the courses of study over the next couple of years will become tougher. Now, they probably won't have the teachers to accomplish it, but, you know, because they need more foreign language teachers and math teachers and science teachers than ever before. But so I'm not saying the Michigan State Board of Ed doesn't do anything, but compared to other states that have been very aggressive and very, forward planning and taking the lead at the state level, really to help the local districts, to really help them, hasn't happened in Michigan. But therefore, our funding is such in Michigan that even if the board wanted to do something, they'd have no money available. The legislature would have no money to start a new initiative anyway. Oh, dear. Well, okay, so I criticized Tom Watkins last week of talking about reform in education, and he didn't give any examples. And I said, well, yeah, nice to say, let's go reform education, like to save money, but where are you going to reform? Well, this week, he kind of says some stuff. He says, the reforms are stated by the Center of Michigan. He gives the website. Business Leaders for Education, that's an organization, he gives their website. Citizens Research Council gives their website. And, of course, the Mackinac Center. Okay, and I've gasped and choked over that because they usually are featured in an editorial in the Dearborn Times Herald each week. They are a conservative think tank. They are conservative. You know what I mean? You say, well, they're an intellectual group. It does research, and they're smart. Yeah, but when you do research to prove a theory that you already hold, you are automatically, or at least in the back of your head, eliminating anything that disagrees with that theory.
Absolutely,
you're biased. You're shaping the facts. I mean, your brain is clouded. Excuse me, Mackinac Center. It's the stupidest thing in the world to have a think tank that has to try to prove an abstract theory. Because, of course, you can do it. You know, Hitler wrote a big book called Mein Kampf. That's right, Adolf, the socialist you love to hate. And rightly so, he wrote a book in 1919 called Mein Kampf, and he outlined what he was going to do if he got into power. And he made a rational case, for all the terrible things he did when he got into power. You know, you can rationalize anything. You can find facts to support anything. It doesn't mean that's all the facts. Doesn't mean you're a human being or a humanist or have any compassion in interpreting those facts. But, you know, so excuse me, Mackinac Center, I know you work hard, but you work hard to fulfill an abstraction that isn't necessarily true all the time. And so I get a copy in advance of, because we're on the mailing list at our station, of the Mackinac Center opinions each week. And of course this week they're asking for money. Please help us continue our work. Yeah, continue your work towards a preconceived idea that hasn't been proven yet and can't really be proven by you because you're not objective. But it's okay to read the Mackinac Center opinions in the Times Herald. Just think it through and understand that they're not paying attention to all the facts. Anyway, so Tom Watkins, therefore, says, hey, they got all these suggestions. Well, one of the four that he mentions, I don't think we want to even go there. Okay. Now, he does mention also that Jennifer Granholm, our beloved governor, whose approval rate is apparently down to like 29%. Very, very low approval rate for Governor Granholm. But then again, what's the approval rate for the state of Michigan in general? By anybody, it's going to be pretty low because things are not happening that should be happening. Good things are not happening enough. But she appointed a bipartisan group called the Emergency Financial Advisory Panel. And it was co-chaired, and I think it was about a year ago, it was co-chaired by two former governors, William Milliken and James Blanchard. Anybody remember James Blanchard? And stacked with knowledgeable Lansing insiders who offered recommendations on how best to avoid ongoing budget crises like Michigan is experiencing now. The governor never acted on her panel's recommendations. Or would the legislature? Okay, even. I mean, a nonpartisan group? Dems wouldn't be for that. Republicans wouldn't be for it. Got the usual partisan battles going on, so I can understand why the governor wouldn't act on it, because nobody would vote for it anyway. It's nonpartisan. It's a compromise that everybody loves to hate, probably, if you can only see things from one direction. So, yeah, I'd love to find out what was in there. We don't really know. And again, he states, asking for new taxes without reform is an investment in a system that will not make us competitive in the global economy. Well, we don't know what the reform is unless you go to those websites, and I'd be suspicious about the Mackinac Center one. Although I do know Mackinac Center wants us to privatize everything, that the schools are doing. And I remember one interesting thing that somebody just mentioned. A lot of states are privatizing their prisons. Okay, think about it. Private company is in place to make profit. They can only make profit if there's a lot of prisoners. So a private company will not do anything to try to reform or rehabilitate the prisoners. And they'll want to keep them as long as possible. They make more money.
But they're also probably going to be held to a stricter standard than our prison system's currently been held to, with the lawsuits that have been brought in place, with the abuse that, you know, by the guards against the prisoners. I think they might be held to a stricter standard in that case.
Yeah, it's possible. We're going to take a phone call here. We think it's our special guest. Hang on.
Ann talking about peace
this
Christmas.
Hi, this is WHFR Radio. Jay speaking. Can I help you?
We decided to address peace action of
Michigan. Hi, Al Fishman.
To talk about peace actions for the new year.
We understand you have an important appointment coming up, so no more than 10 or 15 minutes.
I think this is your call.
Thanks.
I think this is Al Fishman, board of directors and peace and justice activist for over six decades. He's with the Peace Action of Michigan nonprofit group.
So, Al, are you on the line there? Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay, thank you very much. We know that you're, as Amy Powers, Dennis Reimars is also in the studio with us. We're an all-volunteers non-commercial station here in Dearborn, and our signal covers just sort of the west side of Detroit and suburbs, a little bit downriver, although we are also on the internet, and the show is also available as a podcast later from our website. But in any event, we wanted to talk about peace, and I thought of Peace Action of Michigan, of which I've been a supporter for many years. I feel a little guilty in that I haven't gone on any peace marches. I haven't demonstrated, but you have a really distinguished career as a peace activist for many years. I've seen you at a distance at different meetings and throughout Michigan. So again, folks, we're talking to Al Fishman. Al, could you just give us I know you're probably quite humble, but a brief biography of yourself and what you've been involved in. How did you get started? The important question, I guess, as a peace activist, not the most popular thing to do in the world today and probably most times in the past.
Well, there's a bit of irony involved in how I became an activist, because I became a peace and justice activist when I was in the U.S. Army serving an occupation duty in Italy. And two things prompted a turn in my life direction. One was that I had duties that included lecturing to the company. And by the way, the Army was totally segregated at that time. And my responsibility was to lecture members of the company about current policies, current events, but also veterans affairs and things that were related to Army life. Well, President Truman had initiated the desegregation executive order, and it was my responsibility to talk to this all-white company about the prospect of a desegregated Army. And it was a challenging task, but it was also a learning experience for me. And it was from that I developed much of my anti-racist orientation. Mm-hmm. Also at that time, in the American and British zones of occupation of Germany, immediately after the war, the American and British forces were putting back into power of former Nazis rather than the victims of the Nazis who had survived the concentration camps. And that angered me also. So when I came home, I got involved in the campaign of Henry Wallace and the Progressive Party. And that was the start of a long career of being involved, never as a professional, always as a volunteer, being involved in all sorts of peace and justice activities. I've opposed every war that the United States has engaged in since World War II, because I thought none of them were justified, and that includes the present wars.
Right. Tell us a little bit about, and I know you could go on with your many efforts for peace and justice through the years, and there's so many to choose from. If people are looking around for something to do for the holidays or a new start for next year, there's so many ways to get active. Of course, it's important to, you know, vote in the elections, but also to work on getting good candidates. But beyond that, you need to have probably a great number of organizations that support causes other than the lobbyists for commercial interests do, such as various aspects of peace and justice. Maybe you could talk a little bit. You're on the board of directors, I understand, with Peace Action of Michigan right now, and maybe some other groups. But I'm aware, or I just became aware last year, that there's a group in Michigan called the Michigan Peace Team, and of course, Pax Christi, the Roman Catholic organization, I believe, began in Michigan in the 60s, although it's now a national or maybe even international organization. So there's actually several different groups that are working to achieve peace and to eliminate conflict in many different ways. Did I sort of sum up the few big ones in Michigan right now that people might be able to consider becoming part of?
Well, chronologically speaking, one of the most important efforts internationally is coming up on December 27th.
Oh.
You mentioned Pax Christi and the Michigan Peace Team,
mm-hmm.
and they are among the organizers of a group of people who will attempt to cross the border from Egypt into Gaza as a protest against the blockade of Gaza and the impoverishment of the people in the Gaza Strip, and so there are support activities being organized here in Dearborn, in fact, in support of those who are going. And there are several people from Michigan who will be among, I think, something numbering in the low hundreds of people who will attempt against the Israeli forces to cross the border from Egypt into Gaza.
And so
chronologically speaking, mm-hmm. that's one of the first things that's
okay.
coming up.
Okay, uh-huh.
And secondly, we just recently concluded a demonstration against the escalation of the conflict in Afghanistan. We've always been opposed to the war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
But historically, shortly after 9/11, our newly thriving peace movement, and we actually have a network of several organizations. That includes Pax Christi, by the way,
mm-hmm.
And includes the Michigan Peace Team. And we said then, in response to 9/11, that this was an international criminal conspiracy, and that it ought to be treated in an international law enforcement mode,
mm-hmm.
and not as an excuse for going to war, and that's been our position all along. We were opposed
yep.
to the original incursions into Afghanistan because they weren't appropriate. We were opposed to the escalation of the Middle East conflict into Iraq, and we said that two things were necessary. One was to approach this as an international law enforcement effort, international in scope, and that also the United States had to change its policies in the Middle East, in particular, and I say this speaking as an American Jew, particularly with respect to the unconditional support of the Israeli occupation in the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza. And we thought that those two things would minimize the influence of groups like Al-Qaeda and undermine their popularity. But what we've had is just the opposite. The policies that George Bush pursued in particular just inflamed hatred against the United States throughout the world.
Well, working
Al-Qaeda today is there are only about 100 or so
right.
Al-Qaeda operatives
in
Afghanistan.
Right.
They're throughout the world, Indonesia, Somalia, you name it.
Right. Well, I personally can't agree with you more. I've been a philosophical pacifist, and I don't mean passive, of course, but I've agreed with that since the 60s, and you may remember Thomas Hinsberg was one of the local Detroit area priests that helped to start Pax Christi, and
yes.
and he was actually the one that gave me my training in Catholicism before I turned Catholic, although it was not quite mainstream Catholicism, I discovered later, and that's why I'm not practicing Catholic anymore, I guess, and for that matter, I don't think he is either, except in his own soul and spirit, since he was not part of the church anymore. But rather than getting into that, the primary method that the activists are using, Peace Team and Peace Action in Michigan, is, what would you call it, nonviolent civil disobedience?
Absolutely. Oh, yes. Yeah. Now, we've always been followers of Dr. Martin Luther King in terms of our activity.
Mm-hmm.
We had a major civil disobedience demonstration on the very eve of the invasion of Iraq, in which 27 of us were arrested at the federal courthouse downtown Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And I myself have been involved in several civil disobedience actions, risking arrest, and have been arrested for that matter. It is clear that war is obsolete, and that we have to find other ways of resolving conflicts with honest negotiations, and that's the only path for this planet.
Let me restate for our listeners that we are talking over the phone with Al Fishman, who's on the board and a great peace activist. He's on the board of Peace Action of Michigan and a great activist for many, many years in Michigan. We've just mentioned nonviolent civil disobedience and getting arrested. But certainly some of our listeners who may not have read or studied maybe even Henry David Thoreau's essay on civil disobedience or the life and the practice of Mahatma Gandhi, as well as Martin Luther King Jr., this is what we're talking about, folks, civil disobedience. When I think, as Henry David Thoreau said something about when you know the machine, if it's doing something badly, the machine of government, it's going to sort of bring itself down. It's going to end itself. But if things are going along well, but they're endangering people, you have to throw yourself in there. You have to do something, which is why he made his mostly symbolic protest, but that's what they are, of getting arrested because he refused to pay a poll tax in Massachusetts. They actually, at that point, if you didn't pay money, you couldn't vote, even though you were a citizen. And so he didn't pay. I guess he tried to vote or something anyway, and they threw him in jail just for one night. Well, big deal.
Civil disobedience is not the only method of struggle for peace and justice, because there are other things that we do. For example, we do a lot of lobbying on various issues. We try to do it in conjunction with the national movements, but sometimes on our own. We also engage, as I just indicated several minutes ago, in peaceful demonstrations, peaceful protests,
right,
which do not involve the
getting arrested. Of course.
There are the many, many tactics that we use, and including many of us participating in the electoral scene, gauging candidates' positions on issues, and sometimes even outright support. The peace movement in general has faced a very important crisis with the election of Barack Obama, because there is much in what he has said and promised, and even some of the things that he has done on an international scene, things that led to him being the recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when you come to Washington, you're dealing with 60 years of the national security state and the powerful military-industrial complex, which President Dwight Eisenhower, a Republican, spoke about. And so there are enormous pressures on any president, even presidents whose inclinations are different. But the notion of using force to resolve issues. So even though I was, for example, an active supporter of Barack Obama in the presidential campaign, I now oppose what he is doing in Afghanistan, because getting rid of 100 or more al-Qaeda operatives in Afghanistan is not going to make us any more secure than we are now.
Right.
And in fact, the presence of 100,000 troops in Afghanistan, U.S. troops in Afghanistan, is only going to make things worse for us. It will make us less secure than we were before. And so
I certainly see that.
It's really counterproductive. Mm-hmm.
I see that. Amy Powers has a question for you, and then we'll just, I've got one last question to sum up, and we'll let you go. But Al Fishman, Peace Action of Michigan, is on the line with us. Amy?
I know that Peace Action supports the House Bill 2404. It's an exit strategy in Afghanistan. President Obama has already stated an exit strategy in Afghanistan. Is this bill more strident? Is it different than what he's already stated?
Are you speaking of McGovern's amendment or Barbara Lee's amendment?
I'm not sure. It's the exit strategy.
Oh,
it's 2404.
Yeah, that was McGovern's amendment, Jim McGovern. Well, you know, since the decision has now been made to send the troops, we're no longer fighting the battle of saying, don't send the troops. Now what we have to do in the peace movement is to promote not only the beginning of exiting in July of in 2011, but actually accelerating the process. One of our senators, who happens to be in a very important position, namely Carl Levin, has emphasized, first of all, he opposed the escalation and said that we should send 3,000 trainers rather than 30,000 troops to train the Afghan army, let the Afghan people take care of their own security. And but when we asked him about opposing funding, he refused to commit to that, saying that once the troops are there, he is not going to cut off their funds. And so our task now is to accelerate the exit strategy as we see that the policy is not bearing the fruits that we thought it would. And so something other than the McGovern Amendment, which calls for an exit strategy to be included in the plan is now being implemented. And so we're going to have to fight for an accelerated exit strategy with slightly different legislative tactics. But also, we're dealing with, very importantly, the impact not only in Afghanistan, not only in the Middle East, but the impact of this program on the needs of the people in this country. It's going to cost us an additional $30 billion, and the total cost would be like $100 billion just for the troops in Afghanistan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when we see what is happening in our cities and in our states and in our schools, this is unconscionable to spend this kind of money. Our real security lies in providing jobs, in providing health care, in providing education, and providing the city and state services that make life bearable for our citizens.
I'll wrap up. Al, this is Al Fishman, Peace Action of Michigan folks here on the WHFR Journal. We invited him. He's very articulate. He has tremendous arguments to be made. And, of course, we don't have enough time. At least we gave you more than a soundbite, right?
Thank you for the opportunity.
Right. How can our listeners, if they're interested in the peace movements in Michigan and locally, for more information, I assume, of course, the national website, peace-action.org, and they can, I think, link there to what's going on in Michigan. Any other resources for reading or thinking about how to bring peace about someday soon?
So from that site, one can get to many other sites that have information about various topics. We didn't have time to talk about one of the most important things that we're aiming toward in around May of 2010.
Okay. Mention it briefly if you want to. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, which has to do with the question of nuclear weapons, because this is one area where we are very proud of what Barack Obama has said about the need to abolish nuclear weapons. So we're engaging in a petition campaign for the abolition of nuclear weapons, and we're aiming at some major demonstration taking place in New York City in May of next year, where the United Nations Disarmament Commission is discussing the review of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which, along with the Comprehensive Test Ban, are two of the most important landmarks in getting in the process of getting the world rid of nuclear weapons, which is a threat to the entire planet.
Well,
so that's
thank you.
One of the other activities.
Yeah, thank you for all your work and your years of service in the movement. I mean, I know how significant a figure you've been as I followed your name and seen you at different rallies. And thank you so much for your efforts. I don't think there's anything more important than peace in general, but conflict resolution, so we can start working together on some of the real problems of all the people of this planet. So Peace Action board member Al Fishman has been with us. Peace-action.org is an important website. It is a wonderful local group, real human beings. When he talks about protest and marches, you get buses together, you organize it, and it's really the most noble cause of all. It's just so impossible with our media and pop culture and so on, and the sort of do-nothing Republican-Democrat battles that are constantly going on to move easily ahead. But thank you so much for your efforts, and we wish you well. We hope a lot of our listeners may have some new thoughts about how they can be part of this in the new year. So thank you very much, Al Fishman. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Right. Goodbye for now, then. We're going to listen to Jim Hightower and his comment about Obama's war right now. So see if it doesn't sound similar to what Al Fishman was saying.
I'm sure it will.
Yeah. WHFR.FM, station making waves.
It's off to war we go. Pound the drums loudly. Stand with your country proudly. Wait. Hold it right there. Cut the music, slow the rush, and let's all ponder what Obama, Gates, McChrystal, and company are getting us into, and whether we really want to go there. After all, just because the White House and the Pentagon are waving the flag and insisting that a major escalation of America's military mission in Afghanistan is a necessity, doesn't mean it is, or that we the people must accept it. Remember the wisdom of Mark Twain about war-whooping generals and politicians. Loyalty to the country always, he said. Loyalty to the government when it deserves it. How many more hundreds of dead American soldiers and thousands more who will be mangled and shattered does the government's new Afghan policy deserve? How many more tens of billions of dollars should we let them siphon from our public treasury to fuel their war policy? We've been lied to for nearly a decade about, quote, success in Iraq and Afghanistan. Why do the hawks deserve our trust that this time will be different? I had hoped Obama might be a more forceful leader who would reject the same old interventionist mindset of those who profit from permanent war. But his newly announced Afghan policy shows he is not that leader. So, we must look elsewhere, starting with ourselves. The first job of a citizen is to keep your mouth open. Obama is wrong on this policy, deadly wrong, and those who see how wrong he is have both a moral and patriotic duty to reach out to others to inform, organize, and mobilize our grassroots objections. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is no time to be deferential to executive authority. It's our country, not theirs. Stand up, speak out. We are America, and ultimately, we have the power and responsibility.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
We're back now with the new WHFR Journal, Jay Koronek, Amy Powers, Dennis Reimars with you for our last broadcast before Christmas. We're taking next week off because we have some special winter season celebration local programming we've produced for your entertainment and sometimes information. We hope you're all going to have a great holidays. We'll be back on January the 1st. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a holiday. But, well, by 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we hope we're going to be bright-eyed anyway. So we'll see. We'll see how that works out. Whether it's New Year's resolutions or whatever, we'll be back on the 1st. Amy wanted to share something with us now in the spirit of the season.
In the spirit of the season, and we were talking about peace and peace during this time. Well, I've always loved Groucho Marx, and I came across this letter from Groucho Marx to Fred Allen.
And of course, the joke is this is Groucho, not Carl. Okay, yeah, all right. This is, oh, they're so radical over there. They read Marx today.
No, but they probably both smoke cigars.
Groucho, yeah, probably. Go.
This is from Caroline Kennedy's book, A Family Christmas. This is a compilation of letters and stories that she put together a couple years ago. Well, this is Letter to Fred Allen, dated December 23rd, 1953. Dear Freddie, now the melancholy days have come. The department stores call it Christmas. Other than for children and elderly shut-ins, the thing has developed into such ridiculous proportions. Well, I won't go into it. This is not an original nor novel observation, and I'm sure everyone in my position has similar emotions. Some of the recipients are so ungrateful. For example, yesterday I gave the man who cleans my swimming pool $5. This morning I found 2 dead fish floating in the drink. Last year, I gave the mailman $5. I heard later he took the $5, bought 2 quarts of rat gut, and went on a 3-week bender. I didn't get any mail from December 24th through January 15th. For Christmas, I bought a cookbook for the cook. She promptly fried it, and we had it for dinner last night. It was my first decent meal we had in 3 weeks. From now on, I'm going to buy all my food at the bookstore. So you see, the life of a rich man isn't all beer and Skittles, whatever that means. We, too, have our troubles, just the same as the lowly commoner and the shepherd in the hills. My best, Groucho. I just love it because it's obviously a little irreverent, but it seems genuine, Groucho Marx.
It's so easy to criticize the materialism of Christmas, and you know, I just hope that the new economy may bring more of a realization to people that, again, you don't need the gifts. You need the spirit. You need peace, not war, certainly. There. Dennis, you have something to share? Well, you haven't. He's been atypically silent today. Was it that big Christmas party last night?
I had a very fun party last night, and I felt like I left all my contributions there.
Yeah, he was doing one joke after the other, and I will say in the holidays, folks, let's try to keep it light. Some people get very depressed in the holidays.
That's true.
You know, they didn't get invited to a party, or they overeat and feel sick, or they overdrink, and don't do that, folks. Don't over-imbibe alcoholic beverages or anything else that might, you know, warp your mind. Try to stay straight, happy, get some exercise, go out walking, even if it's cold, wear some, you know, warm clothes and your booties and so on, and try to do loving things for people at least once a year. It might actually work. So here on the new WHFR Journal, we're going to conclude now with a traditional piece. Everybody knows the story of The Night Before Christmas, but I found this version by Wilfred Brimley, who a lot of people know as a big handlebar mustached senior citizen, and on TV he's become a pitch man. He was an actor several Ron Howard movies about senior citizens years ago. Can't remember the title of those 2 films.
Cocoon was a Ron Howard film.
Yeah, but no, these were about seniors who actually got the chance to go to a foreign planet, to an alien Cocoon. Planet, and was it Cocoon? Yeah, and be reborn or live forever. And the question of whether or not they wanted to, you know, do that. And then there was Cocoon 2, where some of them came back, actually, to see what was happening. And anyway, that's Wilford, and he sold grape nuts and diabetic supplies and other things on TV. But we hope this will put you in the holiday spirit. If it doesn't, how cold-hearted are you? Anyway, we'll be back in the new year, January 1st, with the new WHFR Journal. Stay tuned for The Best in Blues with Joanne Korchinska coming right up after this show. So all of us here, Amy, Dennis, and I, all wish you the happiest of holidays. Do something loving and keep it going, too, as long as you can. WHFR.FM, station making waves. WHFR Dearborn. Thank you.
Hi, kids. I'm Wilfred Brimley, and I'm going to read you a Christmas poem. Now, whenever you hear this sound, well, that's a signal to turn the page. Okay? Here we go. 'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, I tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below, when what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donder and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky, so up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk and laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team, gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all, a good..."